Verizon just turned on 5G across the country. With the coverage of 5G nationwide and more cities, the unprecedented performance of Ultra Wideband, the fastest 5G in the world. Ultra Wideband is so fast, you can download an album in seconds. Verizon 5G won't just change how your phone works, it will change how businesses do everything. This is the 5G America's been waiting for, only from Verizon. 5G Ultra Wideband available only in parts of select cities. 5G nationwide available in 1,800 plus cities. Global claim based on open signal independent analysis during the period January 31st through April 30th, 2020.
Everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson. So how's everybody doing in this very, very windy afternoon?
Good.
Pretty good.
Not as bad. The weather's not as bad as it is in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's raining there.
Yeah. Hey, there are a couple tweets showing the people up in like the football game got delayed. There, the weather in the stands there was just nasty.
Yeah, it was wild.
Well, Cleveland, I've been to Cleveland, and there's not really much going on there. I'm not going to say it's a bad place because I don't want to insult anyone that does like Cleveland, but I wouldn't go again. It's very blah. All right, so promote, extend, trade. And, if you guys are different people, I think we would have had a really good one today.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Today's Macho Man Randy Savage's birthday.
Oh.
And there could have been so much stuff we could have done with that, but you guys don't know wrestling.
Oh, I do.
Well, yeah, Thomas does, but Lucas and Ken, you guys, you know.
Just look up the cream of the crop.
Exactly.
Promo. That's all
I know. There's like a unionization fight going on right now.
Yeah, they just fired one too.
Some stuff's going on, and some stuff definitely going on in wrestling.
Literally all I know.
My sister's been playing a lot of New Vegas on her Twitch, so you guys are a bunch of damn profligates. But luckily, there's some other stuff going on in the world that has gone on in the world. And there's a couple of other people who are celebrating their birthdays today, and they have a couple of things in common. A, they are New York sport personalities, and they were, to varying degrees, kind of either important or the faces of their franchises at the time. So, who are we going to promote, extend, trade of all these guys celebrating their birthdays today? First, we have Doc Gooden. Then we have Osio Miura. And finally, we have Amari Stoudemire.
Ooh.
The secondary guys is kind of,
Are you saying that the Mets podcast is biased towards
the baseball player?
Yeah.
No. Why would you think that?
And also, Doc Gooden is Doc Gooden. I mean, come on now.
Yeah, he's like a top three pitcher in Mets history.
Whereas OC is more just was a good player, and Amari didn't have his best years in New York, if I recall correctly.
Definitely did not.
He was better in Phoenix.
But I feel like he kind of had that intangible effect of making the Knicks, like, a thing again.
Semi-legitimate.
Right, and then he brought, whatever degree he was involved, and brought Carmelo over, and that obviously helped on the court.
Yeah, that really worked out.
Well, I would say OC is like a better player just because he was like a big part of two championship winning teams. But
literally the two flukiest Super Bowl wins ever.
I mean, hey, a win's a win.
Win's a win.
Be quiet, Patriots fan.
I am a Patriot fan.
But like Stoudemire was like really important to making the Knicks like relevant. Mm-hmm. Like he was a big part of that. For how little that lasted.
It was like
They clawed themselves back into like a year of relevance and then slid right back into being a joke.
Yep. That sounds familiar. So ultimately, obviously, I'm extending Gooden, but I promoted Sotomayor because and traded Osi because I feel like you could have gotten by without Osi, even though he was as good as he was. And Sotomayor's, you know, value was when he was playing, he was solid. He spent a lot of time hurt, so that didn't help. But when he was able to play, he was solid. Not as good as his All-Star days, but. And then, of course, just just the hype around him, the hype around him being on the Knicks, and just the hype that he brought to the Knicks.
Yeah, I see that. Like, if it was Eli, we would be having a different conversation here.
Yes, definitely.
Don't get me started on Eli. Dude's going to wind up in the Hall of Fame as a below-average quarterback for his career.
He is going to the Hall of Fame.
And it's such a joke.
A below average quarterback with two Super Bowl rings.
He made one good throw in those two Super Bowls combined and got MVP in both. It's unreal.
Well, when you dethrone the Patriots and Tom Brady, that's, you know, that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's more about contributions to the game. Knocking Tom Brady down a peg.
Like, always appreciated.
And like how good those Patriots teams were. Yeah. He's like going to be synonymous in NFL history for that forever.
And the fact that that 2007 Patriot team didn't win.
That's so crazy.
Such a fucking joke. The other thing is like you could rerun that the helmet catch play again 100 times. 90 times he just gets sacked. Another 9 times that ball is dropped or intercepted.
Oh, yeah.
Alas, this is the timeline we've found ourselves in.
I'm really not making my – I'm sure there are very few people who are, like me, Mets and also Patriot fans. I promise you, listeners who are angry at me, I don't really care about football.
Or wrestling, unfortunately.
No, I care even less about wrestling. Not by that much, though.
Or Shawnee Time Station.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
Remote Extentry, football, wrestling, Thomas Tank Engine Show.
Plus dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs are great.
Yes, we all like dinosaurs. Well, the NC Dinos are going to be...
Smooth as silk, Steve.
The Dinos are going to be playing the Doosan Bears in the Korea series, because the Bears basically ran roughshod over the KT Wiz in the quarterfinals. No, semifinals. No, I don't know. Whichever one is the championship series. So it's going to be Dinos and Bears in the Korea series, and go Dinos. Mm-hmm. But one guy that we should definitely talk about before we move on from this is a guy that basically is the reason why the Bears are going to the Korea series, and he's one of the hottest pitchers in Korea, and that is, believe it or not, the Chris Flexen. For the season, he was pretty solid. He posted a 3.01 ERA in 116 and two-thirds innings, allowing 97 hits, 30 walks, and 132 strikeouts. Very solid. But he really went into another gear starting in October, which is, you know, the last month of this season. For the entire month, he gave up just 3 earned runs over 31 and two-thirds innings. So that comes out to an 85 ERA, the .85 ERA.
I can't wait to call DeGrom's performances next year Chris Flexen-like.
Yeah, that would be...
Oh, God.
That would be something. In those 31 and two-thirds innings, he allowed 19 hits total. He walked 3 and he struck out 42. So that is pretty dominant. And then in the playoffs, he was even better. He pitched one game against the LG Twins in the quarterfinals last week. And unfortunately for us, he threw 6 shutout innings and he gave up 4 hits. He walked 1. He struck out 11. And then this week, he pitched against the Wiz in the semifinals and he got touched up a little bit. He allowed 2 earned runs, but he went 7 2/3 innings. He allowed 4 hits, he walked 2, and he struck out another 11 batters. So basically, since October 1st, he has a .99 ERA in 45 innings with 27 hits, 6 walks, and 64 strikeouts.
Jesus Christ.
So, yeah. Okay. That definitely will play. And most
I say Stephen Valines-esque strikeout-to-walk ratio there.
Yes, yes, yes. Most Mets fans that don't really follow the minor leagues obsessively, I guess, A, they're probably not listening to this podcast, actually. But, you know, most people, when you think of Chris Flexen, you don't really think of dominance like that. For a short period, for about, you know, 3-4 months in 2016, I think it was, 2017, when he was in Double-A, he was this kind of dominant. So there is something in there, and, you know, the Mets kind of gave him a chance when they brought him up, but at the same time, they kind of didn't. They kind of jerked him around a lot, and that definitely did not help his development. But we were looking at the advanced stats. There are very, I'm not going to say very limited ones available, but obviously there's a language barrier.
Honestly, there's a good amount of stuff there. It's just difficult for us to figure out what the hell it means.
Yes. I mean, certain things, they translate well enough. Certain things, you kind of like, okay, I get what it's trying to say. And then certain things, it just, I don't even know what this means. Google Translate did a bad job. But from looking at what we can interpret, we kind of have an idea of what he's doing different, what it is that he's not doing different, and what it is that's kind of giving him all the success. So the fastball, the velocity, it's more or less the same. It's a little down as compared to his time at the Mets. He is averaging 92.6 miles per hour on it in Korea, which
What's the league average? Oh, or if you were about to say that.
The league average is 88.6. He went from being like a slightly above average fastball. He was actually the 50th percentile from 2017 to 2019 in the U.S. to basically being in the 99th percentile. He's one of the hardest throwers in the league. Obviously, that's going to help. But the biggest thing that seems to be different that he's doing purposefully himself, or at the behest of his coaches, is that he's throwing his curveball a lot more. With the Mets, he threw it 6.1% of the time. With the Bears, he basically has doubled that, and he's throwing it 12.6% of the time. In the major leagues, from 2017 to 2019 with the Mets, that really wasn't an effective pitcher for whatever reason, even though it had one of the higher spin rates in the league. Batters basically hit over 500 against it, so small sample size to a degree, and even just the eye test, it wasn't very good. In Korea, on the other hand, though, batters are hitting .179 over against it, so night and day. And one of the reasons for that is that, much like the U.S., you know, a couple of years ago, Korea has been undergoing that whole flyball revolution. And one of the ways to counter, you know, the big uppercut swings is to use a high fastball. And Flexen has had a lot of success with the high fastball and curve combo. Batters hit 117 against this fastball when he was throwing it in the upper half of the zone. And then tunneling that with the curveball and to a lesser degree the slider in the bottom of the zone. Batters hitting 122 against the curve and 172 against the slider.
Thomas, I swear to God,
It's more or less the same thing Seth Lugo started doing out of the pen, where he throws the fastball up and then buries the curveball down, and you can't focus on either half of the zone because he's mixing them up so interchangeably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know this is completely like anecdotal, and it's not like analysis really, and it's pretty much impossible for us to know, but I wonder if because the curveball wasn't effective here, he was just like, I need to keep my job in the major, so I'm not going to throw it, and like it's actually been a good pitch and he was just too worried about getting just sent down immediately and because it was getting hit. So now that he's in Korea, he's able to kind of like experiment a little bit more because he is one of the harder throwers. So
my
like,
theory is that, you know, it's the same thing with Gesellman where he came up throwing the hard slider that they all throw, the Worthen slider.
Mm-hmm.
And then they throw it a lot. And, you know, unless you're Jacob deGrom or Syndergaard, you're throwing it 88, 89.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't work as well, 86, 87. But he was still kind of leaning on it because I guess the guys who taught him it were on the big league staff.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So
I didn't think about that.
That's my prevailing theory.
And now that he's away from it, he could.
Yeah, you can say, well, the curveball is a better option.
That's kind of like
making me throw.
that was kind of like the Yankees Sonny Gray stuff, where he was like, "My slider's bad," and they were like, "But Yankees throw sliders," and he was like. But it's bad. And then he was getting hit up because, like, I'm throwing a pitch that is not good, like, and here we are. Sorry, that's actually an interesting point.
It's something that kind of stuff does not make sense to me. Like, we know, I mean, obviously the scouting reports from him in AA and below are going to be very different than what was happening in the major leagues because, obviously, the environment is very, very, very different. But mm-hmm. coming up, he had, you know, an above average borderline plus curveball. Every so often, you know, he throws a really good one when he's with the Mets. And like you could see, like, oh damn, okay. And why you would then, you know, they didn't have him scrap it completely, but they taught him the slider. And it was an effective pitch to a degree, but and obviously having multiple weapons is better than not having enough weapons. But why you would have him abandon, not completely abandon, but use the slider, which is not as good of a pitch as the curveball, more. Like, I don't know. It was just weird.
That's
I don't know why teams... Yeah.
Because it's just putting your players in a worse position to succeed because you're, like, banging your head against the wall with your idea. And, like, maybe it works for 99% of the players, and if though you need to also flip it for everyone who it doesn't work for.
Because we see this kind of stuff like all the time, like especially, you know, when doing all of the research for draft guys and stuff like that, you know, a guy that's either in high school, college, he'll throw, you know, he'll throw a curveball and then he'll get drafted and all of a sudden he's throwing sliders or he throws a slider and all of a sudden he's not really using that much anymore and they're having him use changeups. There's obviously they want to teach him the player new things. So that's a factor in all of this. But when you see guys just having their entire arsenals wholesale changed, it's just such a weird thing. Not Zach Thornton. I keep forgetting his name, probably because I'm just so angry about it. The guy that we just traded to the Astros.
Blake Taylor?
Blake Taylor. When he came over from the Astros, he was a big fastball, curveball guy. And Mets had him scrap the curveball in favor of the slider. And it's not like he was bad with the Mets, but just why would you do that? If you have a guy that was successful with this weapon, it's just such a weird developmental thing.
There's a line between teaching a player a new pitch or a new trick, and there's a line between them. And then on the other side of it, it's like literally hurting their performance by taking away something that's good. Like, you wouldn't take away Seth Lugo's curveball because the Mets don't really want to throw curveballs, but that's his best pitch, so you let him rock and you teach him the slider too. Mm. So, like, you could do both. Like, there's no law that says you need to throw one or the other, you know? Like, it's just, like, counterintuitive to me. It seems, like, I feel like that's not analytics. I guess I hate using it in that way, but I can't really think of another way to say what I'm trying to say. Like, I feel like that's you interpreting numbers and stuff incorrectly because you should play to your strengths, you should play to your player's strengths.
That's some lazy analysis where some guy's like, hey, well, batters are league-wide. Yeah. Batters are hitting 180 against sliders and 200 against curves. So therefore we only throw sliders now.
Exactly. And then like the dude who just can't
that
throw.
That does sound like some Mets stuff.
And then the dude who just can't throw one for whatever reason, whether it be comfort, whether it be, who knows? There's a million reasons. Some pitchers just have better pitchers than others, and then you're just putting your guy in a box for no reason, and it's just weird.
And again, a lot of this is developmental stuff. Like, they'll tell a guy, like, okay, your goal for this entire season, who cares about the numbers, who cares about whatever, like, we want you to learn a curveball and or slider, you know, and we'll take that you have a 5 ERA and that your peripherals are horrible because all we want to do is see you perfect this one pitch. So that's part of the minor leagues and development and everything like that. But then you see that carry on until they get to the big leagues. And yeah. It's just weird. I mean,
I absolutely understand why they would want him to try to, because he, in my opinion, still doesn't have a viable third pitch as a starter, right? Like, guys who are fastball, breaking ball don't work generally as starters. You need something else, and it's even hard as a fastball, breaking ball guy. And so I get why they wanted him to learn a slider in the first place, but totally scrapping the curve in the process doesn't get you anywhere. You've just moved from being fastball, breaking ball to fastball, less good breaking ball.
Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at too.
Go ahead. Sorry.
The curveball, it got hit around in major leagues. So, I mean, maybe they were onto something. Maybe it spins a lot.
He didn't throw a lot of them.
Right. That's the thing also. Is it just a kind of self-defeating, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy? Like,
He hung three of the first 10 he threw and then decided it was a bad pitch.
Exactly. It seems way too early for you to throw it out because he doesn't really have a huge sample as a major league player, regardless with anything.
He also wouldn't be the first pitcher to, you know, come up and really struggle to command a pitch and then find it later on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what goes with Flexen next. I mean, we've said this probably like 3 or 4 times, but he definitely has pitched his way to the major leagues if he wants to try again. And if he wants to stay in Korea or go to Japan, I think any team would have him.
Oh, yeah. So, he could make bank as a guy in the Asian leagues, just dominating.
So I think what we're trying to say is Chris Flexen, you do you, man.
Yeah.
And also come on the pod.
Yeah.
Come on, friend of the podcast, Chris Flexen, you do you, bud.
I am admittedly a little, I was like really interested to see if he'd come over or come back, and even if the Mets bring him back. After looking at this data, I'm not as convinced. If I'm being totally honest, he still doesn't have a change. The velocity, I don't know exactly how to interpret the velocity. The ball's a little different there, but if he's lost velocity, that's not great either. At the same time, it might be and then the other thing, and this is something we can't really tell from the pitch of X very well, is this just, did he just get healthier and improve his control and command? Because honestly, mm-hmm. that might have been his biggest issue with the Mets, is just he had like some shoulder issues, if I recall correctly. It seemed like he never knew where the ball was going. So if that's what he's fixed, then I'm much more interested. But there's nothing in the pitch of X data to suggest to me that something is really broken out. Rather, it's just a guy dominating weaker competition, which we've seen Flexen do before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, they say that the KBO is the equivalent of double A. And coincidentally, where did Flexen break out? Double A. Yeah. So yeah. Either way, though, good for him.
Mm-hmm. Given the money the Mets have, if he's interested in coming over and if he doesn't need a guaranteed rotation spot and would just take a couple million bucks, I'll roll those dice.
Mm-hmm. Now, to completely dampen the mood, that leaves us with the Occult Swallows, who fortunately, unfortunately, are the last team that we have that are still actually playing. Not anymore, but this past week. They played 2 games at the beginning of the week, Sunday and Tuesday, and they went 1-1. So they are ending the season now at 41-69-10, 25 games behind the first place Yomiuri Giants. So interesting. This part is kind of interesting. The Central League, which is the league that the Swallows are in, the Giants, a couple of other teams, the league voted to scrap the playoffs completely. So the Giants, they're first place. They automatically won the Central League pennant. The Pacific League, on the other hand, they did not vote to do that. So the 2 top teams of the Pacific League duked it out in a best-of-3 series. the Fukuoka Southland Hawks and the Chiba Latte Marines. And the Hawks won, so they're going to be meeting the Giants in the Nippon Series. And holy shit, the Hawks won in 2014, 2015, 2017, 2018, 2019.
Jesus Christ.
They are, yeah, they're on the verge of becoming like a Gretzky Oilers kind of dynasty. And they have a really stacked bunch of hitters. They have a really dominant pitching staff. So definitely they have a good shot at actually doing that, which is, it must be crazy to have a team that wins all the time.
Yeah.
I know nothing about that.
Yet. You know nothing about that yet, Steve.
Oh, very true. I like that.
I really wish we would start seeing some baseball moves just so that little voice in the back of my head saying, don't believe it, it's too good to be true, would shut the fuck up once we see some things happen. Still there right now, though.
I mean, what did the World Series end, like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago? So
I mean, the crazy thing
is that...
what's
he waiting for?
The crazy thing is that basketball finished what, around the same time, and they're set to start their season again in the middle of December, so their off season's going to be literally a week long.
And teams are already like pretty busy. Like,
yeah, we're going to see like 3 million trades and free agent signings in basketball, and every baseball fan is just that JPEG of the guy poking something with a stick. Do something. Please.
Well, hopefully the Mets now do some good somethings.
Verizon just turned on 5G across the country. With the coverage of 5G nationwide and in more and more cities, the unprecedented performance of ultra-wideband, the fastest 5G in the world. Ultra-wideband is so fast, you can download an album in seconds. Verizon 5G won't just change how your phone works, it will change how businesses do everything. This is the 5G America's been waiting for, only from Verizon. 5G ultra-wideband available only in parts of select cities. 5G nationwide available in 1,800-plus cities. Global claim based on open signal and dependent analysis during the period January 31st through April 30th, 2020.
This is advertiser content.
We now have 2.3 million people incarcerated in America. Less than 7% of them are incarcerated for violent crime.
That's attorney Jeffrey Robinson, director of the ACLU Trone Center for Justice and Equality. His work inspired the making of Who We Are, a podcast by Ben and Jerry's and produced by Vox Creative. Who We Are, a chronicle of racism in America, is hosted by Peabody Award-winning journalist Carvel Wallace.
Surely you knew this was a racist country. What does that mean for us today?
The prison population in the United States has increased 700% since 1970. Black Americans make up almost 40% of it.
We didn't get here by accident. I didn't know these things because I hadn't been taught them. And then the question is, why wasn't I taught them? Because this information, it may be hidden, but it's hiding in plain sight.
Who We Are takes a historic look at the disease of racism in America and traces it back to its tipping points. This includes the tipping point we're at today.
I think Americans are watching and thinking and looking at this issue in ways they never have before. And that's why I say this is our last best chance. Because if we don't get it right this time, where America is headed is someplace I don't think anybody wants to go.
How do we make our last best chance count? Listen to Who We Are, a podcast by Ben and Jerry's and produced by Vox Creative. Now streaming wherever you get your podcasts.
Technically, the offseason has started because we do have some player news. Marcus Stroman, he accepted Mets' qualifying offer, which doesn't happen very often. So they're going to be getting a solid quality pitcher, and they're not going to be sacrificing any draft picks. The first round pick, it's protected, but from the second round on, they'd be losing a pick. The Mets didn't exceed the luxury tax, and they're not revenue sharers, receivers, so they lose their second highest draft pick and $500,000 in international bonus pool money if they signed a free agent who rejected a qualifying offer, which basically all the pitchers of Stroman's caliber are going to be doing anyway. Yeah. So,
or Real Muto and Springer.
Yeah, that's. It's good. The Mets basically are getting a free. I mean, it costs money, but the Mets are basically getting a free high-level pitcher. And I'm assuming that they're going to sign at least one more free agent of that caliber. So odds that they're going to lose their second-round pick. And maybe they go balls to the wall and sign two more guys, and they'd lose their third-round pick. I don't know. The rules don't actually say or make it clear. If they sign a third guy, then they, you know, lose another, the fourth-round pick. I'm not really sure. They just kind of ended at second and third, but...
good free agents, though?
I'm trying to remember who got QOs. It wasn't that many people.
I know Bauer, Springer...
Real Muto, Bauer, Springer, LeMahieu. Yeah. Oh, wait, no. This is a predicted list. Sorry.
I think LeMahieu did get one, though.
Yeah. Just sign a Charlie Morton, though. You know? No QO there, I don't think.
No.
Isn't he going to retire?
He still wants to play from the report, but he would like to play in Florida, but also here, so maybe it could be like, come home.
I mean, Florida is the New York of the South anyway, so.
Jesus.
New York is the Florida of the North. Yeah. Not really.
I mean, I think they need to sign one more legit arm, like, in that, I don't know that it's Bauer, maybe they won't go that high, but someone like Morton,
yes,
Tanaka would make sense. They need one more legit guy like that. And then I think you can do a fourth starter more in that, Garrett Richards, Drew Smyly, third tier pool of arms. Anthony DeSclafani is an interesting reclamation guy, but having Stroman they needed at least two starters, and having him take the QO just makes that a whole lot easier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they don't want to, like, cause there's still kind of, SNY has been talking about them maybe going after Bauer still. But I wonder if they don't want to allocate all of their, like, big ticket stuff to pitchers. Like, I would understand why they would want to, but also, like, maybe they just want to diversify their assets a little bit. Like, it would make sense either way, like, on the field, that whichever way they go.
I don't particularly want to have a long discussion about Bauer's off the field antics. But I think he's quite good on the field. I think he has a higher ceiling than Stroman on the field, which he's different. Stroman's weird in that he's like the most consistent dude on the planet. He's just going to churn out 3-win seasons, which year in, year out isn't going to make him look that good relative to the rest of the league. Cause there's always like 30 guys putting up that many wins or whatever. That might be a little too high.
I mean, each team needs 5 of them though.
Right, exactly. But the consistency matters, right? So just year in, year out, he's going to do this, and you're going to get 3 to 4 wins, and he's a genuinely good dude. He's still in his prime.
They should work out a long-term extension for him.
Absolutely. Like, I'm pretty sure you could get him to sign, like, 4 to 5 years less than $100 million in this market. Like, give him 580, and I'm pretty sure he'd take that.
I would definitely look.
I would take that.
Yes, well, of course we'd take it.
I would definitely look into it if I were the Mets, just because, like, Steve Cohen is talking about in his press conference winning a World Series in 3 to 5 years, and all the stuff about winning now and all that. You have no pitchers on the horizon. Yep. Like, there's just, like, Matthew Allen is young, and he's the best one you got, and he's far
literally
away.
None above full season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, it's going to be at some point where you're just going to have to pay the dues you have. And, like, Syndergaard, that's a tough one because he's hurt right now. But, like, I don't know how you could – you got to start talking to Stroman, I think. Just be like, hey, do you want to be our second to third best guy for the next 4 years?
I mean,
like,
he fits the window perfectly.
He does. 100%. Yeah.
And I think in an ideal world, he's your number 3 starter, not your number 2 starter. So –
like, but that's not bad either.
No, no, it's not. And I think in a world where I think Morton makes a lot of sense. You pick up Morton, like in a perfect world, right? You sign Morton, Syndergaard comes back healthy late in the season. Stroman's your fourth starter for the playoffs.
And I mean, Thor's already throwing off a mound too.
Yeah.
So like obviously that's still a long ways away for him. But that's kind of I didn't expect that yet to see video of him actually throwing. mm-hmm. off a mound because of the timeline, how it was laid out. So that's encouraging, but I also wouldn't count on him either.
No, just, you can't.
You have to go into the season assuming that he's hurt.
Yep.
Just because yes. that's the only safe way to do it.
And then like, worst case scenario, if you get to midseason and Thor's healthy and the three guys you signed and Peterson are all healthy, when you tell Peterson, tough shit, you're optioned.
Man, that's rough.
Yeah. It's a business, you know.
Sorry.
I think he would tear lefties apart in a playoff rotation.
Yeah.
Peterson?
Or not a playoff rotation, a playoff...
bullpen?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be a really good role for him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think during the regular season, you send him to AAA and let him stay stretched out, though. Unless he's just, like, totally...
I mean, it depends who else is in your bullpen.
Yeah.
That's the other part of it.
Depends on the bullpen, too.
Either way, he's playing a role somehow.
Oh, yeah.
As usual, we've gone off on a very, not that much of a tangent, but
not really.
But... Strowman, yay, good.
Yeah, so we're
I'm
happy.
Also a little. I didn't expect it, so I was happy when that news came in. I expected him to test because I figured
some of the free agent predictions for him were wonky. Like people were saying 345. He's gonna get more than that. He has to, unless the economics are really just that screwed. In which case, Steve Cohen, go sign everyone.
Go save baseball.
Yeah.
lose every single draft pick. But
I don't even care at that point.
Yeah, that makes draft coverage a lot easier for me.
When you just go sign everyone, then you don't have to trade for Lindor. You keep mm-hmm. your prospects, and you just sign every good player off the market.
But I want Francisco Lindor. I want him so bad. Mm-hmm.
I think I'm on the Lindor. We should have a longer discussion about that at some point.
One thing that signing all these free agents is gonna do, like we know, okay, I would rather have the free agent than the draft pick, obviously, as a Mets fan, because it's a guy obviously immediately contributing to the Mets in a hopefully above league average way, whereas a draft pick, you know, most of them flame out. But one thing that might impact is how the Mets approach the draft, because they've been employing, you know, a atypical draft strategy the last couple of years. If they lose, let's say, pick 2 and 3 from signing two guys that rejected qualifying offers, you're losing that second round pick and that third round pick money, and kind of difficult to get creative.
Yeah.
With less money. Mm. But obviously the guys that are still going to be, you know, available in round 3 on round 4 on, the Mets haven't had much luck identifying the good ones,
even when they
weren't trying to do it. So
I wonder if that gives them more carte blanche to go crazy in those rounds and get like really young dudes and like high school guys and try to like convince them.
Well, we'll see, I guess.
It would be interesting to see how they approach a draft if they lose a lot of their early stuff outside of the first, obviously.
I think in that situation, you just try to get the best player with the first pick and screw the rest of it. You know?
Seniors.
Probably, yeah.
I just hope, though, that you know they invest some of the Cohen cash in scouting and are able to
identify. The nice thing about him being like a finance guy is he understands return on investment being extraordinary for like even a mild draft success.
Are you telling me Steve Cohen might have a better understanding of risk reward cost benefit analysis than Jeff Wilpon?
Lucas, I do believe that is what I'm implying.
That's very bold. Big if true.
I would have never guessed. Well, related tangentially to the draft is what we're going to talk about now. And basically, it's been over a year since Baseball America first reported that Major League Baseball wanted to slash and burn the minors and reduce all the teams from around 160 to around 120 by just basically eliminating all the short season leagues, the Appalachian League, the Pioneer League, the New York Penn League, and the Northwest League. And obviously, communities all over the country were upset, and there was plenty of organized resistance, but at the end of the day, you know, there really isn't anything anyone can do except shame Major League Baseball. And we know they don't give a crap about PR. So they just unilaterally changed things the way they wanted to, and no one could do anything about it. So according to the early reports, in terms of how this would affect the Mets, they'd lose the Kingsport Mets. They were in the Appalachian League. And they would lose the Brooklyn Cyclones, who were in the New York Penn League. Losing Kingsport, you know, sucky for the people of Kingsport, but no big deal. You know, the league is small, it's tucked into an area of the country, it's not particularly affluent, so whatever. Losing Brooklyn, on the other hand, would be a very big deal. Since minor league baseball started publicly tracking this information in 2005, Cyclones have led the league in attendance every single year. Their average attendance in 36 home games beats out a lot of the full season affiliates in leagues all over the country. The fans are into it. The stadium, it's nice. You know, Coney Island is kind of seedy, but it's nice to go see a game at.
It's fine when you're going there. Like, yeah. The times that the games are going. It's crowd. It's very popular, populated. Yeah.
It's not giving. It's not something that you would just kind of give up willy nilly. That's something that's a franchise that you hold on to. So the original plan was that Brooklyn was going to be bumped up to double A and that the Binghamton Rumble Ponies were going to dissolve. And that would suck for the city of Binghamton, but it made sense because Binghamton is basically like the opposite of Brooklyn. Not a baseball city. Stadium, there's nothing wrong with the stadium, but just kind of like blah. And they've been either dead last or second to last in attendance in the Eastern League since 2005. So, you know, sorry the people in Binghamton, but oh well. Unfortunately, though, things are more complicated than just magically swapping out one team with another. And since the entire structure of the minor leagues as we know it changed, you just kind of got to go with the flow. So one of the big things coming out of the reports of the last couple of days is that the Florida State League is being shifted from high A to low A. And since they play at the spring training complexes, it makes sense. You have the rookie affiliate in the spring training complex, and then you have the next one up, the low A affiliate, will be at the spring training complex too. So makes sense, simple. Bad thing about that is that for the Mets is that the Columbia Fireflies, being a low A team in the South Atlantic League, they are now redundant. And they are the team that ended up being the odd man out. And they are now, unfortunately, gone. So as things seem to stand right now, Syracuse is going to remain the AAA affiliate. Binghamton is going to be the AA affiliate. Brooklyn is going to be the high A affiliate in the new Mid-Atlantic League, which has not yet formed. So we don't know who else is going to be around. I think the Hudson Valley team that the Yankees are taking over that we'll talk about in a little bit are going to be part of that as well. And then St. Lucie is going to be the low A affiliate in the Florida State League. Sucks for Columbia. Yeah. Because just like Brooklyn was like the opposite of Binghamton,
aren't
so is
Columbia.
Are a
lot of these still kind of like shifting though? So like they'll probably find an affiliate given that they have probably like the nicest stadium.
Yeah, they are not going to be completely contracted whatsoever.
Yeah,
they're going to exist for somebody. But it just sucks
tweeted,
that it's not us.
They tweeted this big long thing, like a goodbye post, and they were like, "We're looking forward to finding our next affiliate." So
yeah, they have good media people. they were talking about how they got broken up on Twitter, and their new Twitter bio is like low A affiliate for somebody in the some league.
That's funny.
So
they're also the team that had the when they rebranded from the.
Sand Nats, yeah.
Right, to the Fireflies. They had those glow-in-the-dark hats at first.
Mm-hmm. They still do.
They still have those?
Yeah, yeah. And the jerseys.
Their marketing department is just on point.
Yeah.
Am I still allowed to wear my Chicharrones hat?
I hope so. I mean, there's nothing says you can't celebrate Chicharrones just because they're not in Mets. I mean, everybody loves Chicharrones. I'm sure if you go to Columbia. I'm sure if you go to Corona, when you're on your way to a Mets game, you will get many knowing looks. So I was looking forward to going back to Columbia next year during my, you know, watching teams, and just sucks that I'm not going to get to go. I mean, I'm not just going to go because the hell of it. I don't travel too much, so that obviously has to be a reason. But definitely had the best barbecue that I've ever had because of their mustard barbecue.
That's the way.
Yep, exactly. And
geographically, this makes sense, right?
Like, yeah.
It's crummy. Like, we liked Columbia, but it makes sense to have, like, Binghamton, Brooklyn, Syracuse, and, oh, my God, I'm having
You're basically, you have all of your infrastructure in the same place as either your big league team or your complex.
Or your complex, right.
Mm-hmm. And, like,
the complex is your lowest level now. The league closest to your complex is the lowest level. So it makes a lot of sense.
That's logistically, it's a no-brainer, really. The more I thought about it, the more I was like, yeah, that I could see why the Mets would want that, even if, like, Binghamton doesn't do necessarily well in the attendance and all that stuff.
I still would have much preferred, I mean, no contraction, obviously, but I think, honestly, a five-level system would make more sense. I wish there was still at least one more team. It's a shame there's not.
Well, there is. The rookie affiliates, the GCL Mets, they still exist.
Right. That's true.
But the Mets were not the only team to have a surprise like this. And I guess as, you know, time goes on and more teams have to make decisions, you know, other teams are going to make some kind of shocking ones. With the Yankees, who are really the other team here, we knew that they were going to lose the Pulaski Yankees and the Staten Island Yankees, their rookie and their short A affiliates. But they went even further than that. They replaced the Charleston River Dogs, who are in the South Atlantic League, with the more local Hudson Valley Renegades, who used to be the short A affiliate with the Braves. And even more surprising is that they replaced the Trenton Thunder with the Somerset Patriots, and the Somerset Patriots are an Atlantic League team that now they're getting official major league / minor league affiliation. And honestly, replacing Trenton, that is a huge miss for the Yankees. I love when Binghamton plays Trenton. I drive over to all of those games because, A, there's a Cracker Barrel like 10 minutes from the park, and I love Cracker Barrel.
God damn it.
Priority. I do not love Cracker Barrel.
I do not love Cracker Barrel.
No.
Well, I don't know. You're missing out, man. But if you are a person who is inclined to like Cracker Barrel, such as myself, that is literally the only one, like, anywhere nearby. So that sucks. But that aside, Cracker Barrel aside, Arm & Hammer Park, it's probably one of the nicest minor league parks that I've been to. It's kind of tucked away right on the Delaware River. The management there, they are some of the most helpful and accommodating people that I've dealt with in the years that I've been covering, you know, minor league stuff at AA. Energy in the stands, it's, you know, very high.
You're leaving out the most important part.
Yes.
The bat dog.
Yes, so you have Tommy Smith, the bat boy, and you have Rookie and Dash, the bat dogs. And they are not things that you're going to find anywhere else. I'd be interested to see if they try to import over the dogs, but Trenton and Bridgewater, where the Somerset Patriots play, it's actually not really that close. I thought there was just like an exit on the turnpike, but it's like an hour and 10 minutes away or so, which is a kind of pain in the ass.
I think that's a little bit of an over-exaggeration. Maybe it's just because I live directly in between the two.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's 45 minutes from me, and Bridgewater, where the stadium is maybe 20 minutes, half an hour.
Yeah, it's also not off of the turnpike. I thought it was just like one exit or so. It's off of like 278 or something. Like
it's off of 287.
Oh, wow, I'm dyslexic.
Yeah, that literally off. Right off 287.
But
Which brings me to a point I wanted to make, which is, as sad as it is for Trenton, that this is moving literally into my backyard.
I mean, it's like
I used to work at a shop right that was literally like two blocks from where this was.
It's closer for me too. Is. It's definitely closer, but it just still makes me sad.
It's shitty.
Yeah, it always felt like their relationship with Trenton was really strong.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a good ballpark.
Yeah,
that's the thing that the Yankees did what they did and became unaffiliated with Trenton just shows how fake all the reasons for doing all this is. Because originally they were claiming that a lot of these teams had stadiums that weren't up to snuff. They were forcing players and to work out and play in subpar facilities. And basically that pretense is just completely gone now because Arm & Hammer Park, very nice, very state of the art. I had the unfortunate privilege, I guess, of getting to see parts of the stadium that are off limits to other people, like literally underneath the stadium, underneath the stands. Cause last year my brother dropped his phone in a crack.
Oh no!
The
yeah, so I got to go down there. It was pretty cool, actually. Yeah. But you know, the Thunder, they are a very successful team. And there's no reason that the Yankees needed to do what they did. And basically the Yankees had leverage and they used Somerset and they just kind of dangled organized affiliation status to kind of extract some concessions out of them that they wouldn't be able to get from the Trenton Thunder. And they moved because it's a business and it's, if they could save $20, they're going to save $20, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and also, as usual, baseball just masks their nonsense with some legitimate problems with the minor league system, and then it becomes immediately obvious how nonsensical their justification was.
Mm-hmm. And the only other thing that they could have possibly cited is like, oh, well, you know, Trenton might not logically fit into where we want to have our minor league system, just like Columbia didn't logically fit anymore.
I mean, but Trenton's a hell of a lot closer.
Right, exactly, right. But Trenton, it could logically fit in the Eastern League, where it is right now. If they wanted to move it and juggle affiliations and put it in the Mid-Atlantic League that they're building, it would fit there too.
Mm-hmm.
Even the International League, it would fit there. You know, any league that is in the area, it would fit. So there's just no reason. Yeah, the Yankees just basically found some suckers elsewhere and they said, see ya.
It's also wild that, like, now with minor league, with the minor leagues shrinking, it's going to be harder for these places to find an affiliation. Because, like, the Mets lost, like, the Mets moved from Vegas for very, very reasonable reasons. And then Vegas got snapped up immediately, you know? But, like,
because there's no one else left.
Exactly, though. Like, now, yeah. I don't know if there's a place for Trenton to go that's close. That's going to be, like, a solid destination for teams that won't be mad that they have to be at Trenton because they're in Trenton and they might not be in on the eastern side of the country. You know what I mean?
So, like, so the list is, like, what? Baltimore isn't too far. Philly isn't too far.
I know Philly has a good relationship with the Fightin' Phils.
Well, I mean, I'd hope so.
The problem with Philly is that all of their affiliates are already super local. Like, the farthest one is probably, or the farthest one outside of the complex teams is probably, what, like, Lakewood? And Lakewood's maybe an hour.
And that's not even far, yeah. Like, Philly has, like, the ideal setup.
Baltimore, too, to a degree.
Yeah, that's true.
They're all basically around Maryland.
And that's what I think the Mets are going for with moving to Binghamton instead of...
Yeah, they kind of started it with Syracuse, trying to make everything, you know, clustered. So I guess there are a few options.
It just depends if they're looking.
Washington would maybe not be a bad one for Trenton.
Actually,
Pittsburgh maybe a little too far.
You can squint and do Pittsburgh.
Syracuse
but
is more or less the same distance, right?
I think Pittsburgh, I think, is further than...
I don't think so. I think Syracuse is...
So Washington to Trenton.
Syracuse, I think, is further.
All right.
Syracuse just feels closer because it's in the same state. But,
right.
Like, Syracuse
there's
is
also like a lot of like rail distribution there. Like Amtrak is quick if you wanted to do that. There's a lot of commuter shuttles.
That is what I'm going to be doing next year.
You can make Roger Davis take an Uber, you know.
Didn't he hit a home run after that, right?
Yes.
Also, one other, you mentioned it kind of tangentially and reminded me, Vegas, the Nats were in Vegas, and Minnesota, another team, basically, they did what the Yankees did. They dangled affiliation in front of the St. Paul Somebodies, which was a minor league, an independent team. They're gaining affiliation. So the Twins are leaving Rochester. Yes. The Twins are leaving Rochester, and the Nats are moving into Rochester now.
Because
so,
I'm pretty sure that St. Paul's team, if it's the team I'm thinking of, is like a big-name independent league.
Yeah, they are team. All of the big-name independent teams. The St. Paul team, the Sugarland Skeeters, the Somerset Patriots. I'm sad that the Long Island Ducks are not involved here, but...
Could you imagine kind that's Triple-A team, Long Island Ducks?
Hell yeah. I'm all
Jordani Valdespin is still there for some reason.
Oh, my He's God.
It's in the contract that they have to sign him to a minor league
he won't
deal.
League.
Per my googling, Syracuse to New York is 250 miles. Pittsburgh to Trenton is 320 miles via car. So it's pretty close.
What is it to Washington?
Trenton to Washington?
Yeah, because I know Washington has a few affiliates that are kind of there's no geographical.
Probably like
only 171. Like
really?
That.
Oh
yeah,
wow.
So that would probably be the best fit.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But then Washington's going to have to drop someone, and then we're talking about this with a whole different, you
but
know.
Washington has, let me pull that up.
Listen, screw Washington.
Yeah, that's true.
Washington has at least one that's just way nowhere
don't they
close.
Have, don't they have one of the
I think it's Fresno.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, Fresno, Harrisburg, this would be closer than Harrisburg.
Yeah,
absolutely. Fredericksburg.
Would it be closer than Fresno? I'm not sure.
Maybe.
Slightly.
I thought they were. See that whole big spiel I just went on. I thought that the Nats were in Las Vegas. The A's are in Las Vegas. Then who the hell's in Las Vegas?
The Nats also have Auburn, New York as an affiliate. This would be a significant. Yeah, so maybe that happens.
The Batavia Double Days, I think.
Yeah.
Or the Auburn, whatever.
Auburn Double Days.
Yeah.
Oh, they rebranded to the Aviators. They're not the 51s anymore. That's lame.
Yeah, they did it.
It's a whole new stadium, whole new team, whole new everything.
They're the Athletics now.
A's, okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, they have a whole new thing. I think that was, like, they announced it right before the Mets left. So the Mets got, like, last year, the 51s. And then they used, the Mets leaving to be, like, a total rebrand. Like, now we're a new we're in a new organization, too, and everything.
That's right. That's why Pete Alonso walking off on the last day was so awesome, because he literally was closing the book on an entire franchise, an entire stadium, an entire everything.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So what you're saying is Pete Alonso killed the Las Vegas
51. Single-handedly.
Wow. That is bad.
With his bare hands.
He could. He looks like the kind of guy that could like rip a pineapple in half, so. So, yeah. This new 2021 minor league is going to definitely take some getting used to. I think that we need to institute some kind of, like, fine every time we say St. Lucie is low A. I mean, excuse me, St. Lucie is high A instead of being low A.
I'm going to forget that. I'm going to write it in the minor league write-ups, too. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact. And then I'm going to have to go back and delete it.
I mean, hell, yeah. I couldn't remember the old affiliates, so this isn't going to change anything for me. It's just going to be as confused a mess as always.
I think the only thing that I'm actually excited about, though, is Brooklyn being full-time because I'm so close.
Yeah, it's definitely will be better for us to have a team where there are probably going to be more prospects than Brooklyn, and obviously baseball will be April to September instead of June to September. So yeah.
That's
baseball. More baseball is good.
Yes.
All right. Well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can follow us on Twitter. Well, no, excuse me. You could send us an email first. We like those better. From complexthequeens@gmail.com. But if you don't want to send us an email, then you could follow us on Twitter. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at SaidMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to our podcast or get your podcast from, rate and review it. And of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.